evening, guys. I'm recovered. I'm cured alcohol. My name is Scott.
Hey, Scott.
And welcome to the guys who are at this meeting for the first time, and those of you who are new to this meeting. Meetings like this were the difference in early on in me getting into this process that is laid out in this book. I drank for a long time. Today, I'm in that position of neutrality that it talks about in the 10th step. As a result of doing this work, I was able to tap into a power greater than myself that I choose to call God today, which I am convinced it keeps me sober through all the difficulties that life can present itself at certain times. I was roughly, 9 months sober. I had just gotten out of 5 months of treatment between Gosnell, TSS, and Stephen Miller House. And my experience was life wasn't getting any better just because I stopped drinking. And I can look back on that time period now, and that was a blessing in hindsight that my life didn't get better. Because had my life gotten better from the day I put the drink down, I would have never gotten into this work when I did. I got into this work rather soon after getting out of Miller House and running amok in AA up in Falmouth, going 3, 4, 5 meetings a day, and just every part of life was a struggle. It was that simple. I didn't want to drink because I was beaten down to a place where the thought of a drink repulsed me. But the constant thought of not drinking and not drugging was just always there. It was always in the back of my head. So thinking about drinking and thinking about not drinking are the same thing. I'm still obsessed with the thought. And it talks about in the book and a little bit later readings, the great obsession of every drinker is that someday they can drink normally. You know, and being an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, which again is further information in this book, which I was able to identify in this process, it's a process for a reason, you know? How many of you guys in this room, I'm not asking for a show of hands, how many of you have admitted you were powerless over alcohol before and gone back out and drank? You know? Okay, we'll get a show of hands. That's cool, too. Either way. But, you know, that's the thing of it. Knowing you can't drink, for most of us, in Alcoholics Anonymous, won't prevent you from picking up a drink. You know, very early on, I can remember, well-intended people saying to me, just don't drink. You know, I would say exactly what was on my mind early on, and I would look at them and say, if I could do that, why would I be here? I would just not drink. I'm incapable of not drinking on my own willpower. You know, and it talks about in this book the moral psychology and the essential psychic change that is required. Now, I don't know what anyone else's situation is. I'm not here to talk about that. My situation was there was nothing really left in my life that I wanted to hold on to. You know, I was talking to one of my guys the other day that I was working with for a while, and I got into this work because I was just out of ideas. You know, every other method I had tried to use of getting back into the stream of life was failing. Now, I hadn't drank since I got into treatment, so it wasn't like I was constantly relapsing in my early sobriety, but I was batshit crazy in my early sobriety. And I found my sponsor actually when I was in treatment at Miller House. He worked there then, and he still works there today. I was actually talking with him last night, and he agreed to help me. And he wanted me to learn about Alcoholics Anonymous. It wasn't like, when do we start writing a fourth step? He says, you don't even know what the problem is yet. He says, you can't address the solution until you have an understanding of what the problem is. All right, and I actually, you know, he had me go through the forwards of all of this and to have an understanding of what it's talking about. In the foreword to the second edition, it says, large numbers of recoveries and reunited homes. They made their impression everywhere alcoholics who came to AA and really tried. 50% of them at once and remained that way, remained sober. 25% within a year remained sober. So that's 3 out of 4, okay? And what they're talking about is the step work. All right, they weren't you know, 352 meetings a week to go to back then. There was the step work. You know, and those who did this, went through this process, remained sober. All right? And that's the simple truth of it all. Now, if you feel you can remain sober and get a, have a good life by going to meetings, I wish you the best of luck with that. I don't come from that variety. I'm the alcoholic of the hopeless variety. And we got into the doctor's opinion. And, the first thing he said to me is, I want you to get an Oxford English Dictionary. And, of course, I came back with a Webster's edition. And he said, that's not an Oxford English Dictionary. I said, it's a dictionary. He said, look, you're going to follow directions. If you want my help, you're going to do what I tell you to do. If you don't, that's fine. You can go get somebody else. And, you know, early on, I thought he was being harsh with me. He wasn't. He was giving me the truth, my truth. You know, when we first met, before we got into the work, he was the first guy to say to me, where I didn't, retaliate towards him, he says, there's two types of alcoholics. Those that are screwed and those that know they're screwed. His wording was a little different than that. I don't believe it's necessary for me to swear while I'm sharing, okay? I can get the point across without doing that. And he said to me, which one are you? And I knew I was screwed. And I said, I'm screwed. He says, yeah, you are. And he goes, you're screwed either way. Now, that one I didn't really like too much, which I didn't understand until a little bit later in the reading. It was actually more about alcoholism, where I understood how screwed I was. But he had me get the book, and we started going through the doctor's opinion. And the doctor's opinion, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Well, why is it we're powerless? What does the powerlessness actually mean? Well, I can't drink in safety. The doctor says that. So all they can suggest to me is entire abstinence. And my history throughout my life shows I'm unable to abstain. All right? Frothy emotional pills, solvent devices, knowing how injurious alcohol is to me when I put it into my system and what will happen to me when I put it into my system, or drugs. I mean, I'm more drugs than anything else. You know, and that was key. If you're in here and your thing is drugs, and you don't really think of yourself as an alcoholic, because that's how I did when I first came into this. He said, there's no distinction between alcohol and drugs. And that was crucial for me early on. He said, don't let a word kill you. Because all it is a word. So if your addiction is not alcohol, or not, you don't think that's your primary addiction, and you feel your primary addiction drugs, it's just a word. So we use the word alcohol as all-encompassing of addiction in the purpose of this book. So there's no distinction between alcohol and drugs. So they're giving us the plan of recovery. The doctor is starting to lay it out, Dr. Stilkwit. I believe in the original manuscript, and correct me if I'm wrong, one of the guys that might know this for sure, Silkworth didn't put his name to this. It says the physician. So even Silkworth, with all he's done for Alcoholics Anonymous, was not sure about how this was going to work. He wasn't quite sure he was going to put his reputation on the line for this. I believe it's in the second edition Silkworth puts his name to this. But it talks about the first patient he met at the Toons Hospital in 1938. That patient was Bill Wilson. All right, so his experience with Wilson. In the course of his third treatment, he acquired certain ideas concerning a possible means of recovery, which is passing it on. All right, one alcoholic helping another alcoholic is the altruistic movement that's growing amongst us. That's what we're doing here tonight. Me sharing with you, your sponsor sharing his experience with you, and giving you the information as he understands and help you understand it. Because left to my own, I'm not going to understand this. You know, you say, go home, read the first 63 pages. I'll come back 2 days later going, I don't have no idea what that meant. You know, I needed someone who had experience with these steps to take me through it. Page by page, paragraph by paragraph, sentence by sentence, and word by word. All right? I am not going to understand this on my own. I had no idea what this book was talking about. You know, the physician at our quest gave his letter and been kind enough to lodge upon his views. Another statement, 12, in the statement confirms, we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe the body of the alcoholic is quite abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told we cannot control our drinking. That's the frothy emotional appeals and so forth. And just because we're maladjusted to life, which I was, completely maladjusted to life. My perception of life was far different than people who I knew who weren't alcoholic looked at life. I was an outright mental defective. And the first time that was brought to my attention, I wasn't sure if I was supposed to take offense to that or not. But he said, he goes, "You're an outright mental defective." And I can clearly remember just looking at him going, in my head going, "Really? This is how you're going to help me? Call me names?" You know? But he was right. I have a distorted view of the world. And what it is, you know, we have an allergy, okay? And people use the analogy of peanuts and, you know, shellfish and stuff like that. I have an abnormal reaction to a normal substance, all right? But it doesn't, the way it works in my head is I don't react to that in the same way that I would. I can remember clearly in first grade walking home from school and throwing up and remembering I had wax beans with lunch that day. And it was the wax beans that made me sick. That's what I told myself. I haven't had a wax bean since 1966, okay? Because I equated wax beans with me getting sick. But that wasn't the case with alcohol and drugs. No matter what happened in my life, I continued to do it. So somebody telling me I can't drink isn't going to prevent me from drinking. You know, it talks about the obsession. That's a desire beyond my control, my mental control. The phenomenon is a scientific fact, which we can't pinpoint when it's going to happen. And a craving, that overwhelming physical craving. So you couple together a phenomenon of craving, coupled with a mental obsession and a physical compulsion, I'm going to continue to drink, despite my best thinking. Okay? Now, when it came to alcohol, in my case, every time I picked up a drink, I didn't just continue to drink and drink into a blackout, okay? But what it did is when I put alcohol into my system, my thinking flipped, all right? It went to a completely different place. Now, my main thing was cocaine and barbiturates. I was unable to do a line of blow, all right? I mean, absolutely, I knew I couldn't start. If someone offered me a line, response wouldn't be thank you. It would be how much do you have? And then I would consider it. And I knew that. I'm not being a wise ass about this. This is my truth. It might not line up with some of your truths, but this is my truth. Now, when I didn't have a drink in my system, I could look at that almost from a rational standpoint and go, no, can't do it. But put that one drink into my system, my thinking flips. The craving begins. The physical craving begins in my head from that first drink. All right, and I can literally remember salivating, waiting to go hook up. Okay, and if you can relate to that, that's that physical. That's the physical part of this. All right. So they're talking about a moral psychology. So we have to change. I remember writing, and I have notes in this that I wrote when I first went through this. That we have to reach a bottom. I had my bottom was more after my 9 months of being away from a drink and drug, an emotional bottom. I was just spent. You know, I was completely and utterly exhausted pretending life was okay because I wasn't drinking. When we talk about a powerlessness, it's I've lost the power of choice. And that's really what it comes down to. I can say I'm powerless over people, places, and things. But the powerlessness that this book is specifically talking about is the loss of choice. And it tells us, I believe in this, and there's a solution. Since for whatever obscure reason, we have lost the power of choice. Why do I drink alcoholically? Because I'm an alcoholic. That's the simplest of explanations. I don't have to look to my childhood why I was an alcoholic. You know, I drink alcohol because I'm an alcoholic. And I know that sounds oversimplistic, but that's the simplicity of this book. It cuts through the crap of why we think we do. We don't take my will back or any of that stuff either. You know, I have free will. I have no idea how to use the will properly. My will is self-will, okay? And left to my own devices, I will pick up again, all right? My dependence upon alcohol and drugs and dependence upon things human had to change. I had to find a power greater than myself, which would relieve me of this obsession and this compulsion that I had wasn't going to go away by me wishing it away. All right, I had to change the person I was when I came in here. And it says all we have to do is follow a few simple rules. The few simple rules it's talking about of the steps of recovery. All right, now I got into this for, like I said, for the simple reason I was just out of ideas. All right, and I wasn't going by what my first sponsor said or what my second sponsor said. I mean, I was going by what they said, but I had to get this my own experience. Listening to, I mean, Bobby was the first guy I ever heard, and I heard him a few times up in Falmouth, and he just had me. And when he was talking, and you know, I always go to the orange one. I just love that analogy you gave. You know, admitting we're alcoholic is the ante to get into the game. Now, what are you willing to do about it? The question was asked to me, what length am I willing to go to? And I said anything. And I thought I meant that with all my heart and soul, but it took a little bit of more of an emotional bottom for me to get into this work. My physical health had to deteriorate as well as this. But this is the beginning, all right? And really, if you're in the middle of this process, you're thinking about getting into it, or you're in the writing, I encourage you wholeheartedly to write. I know me saying this isn't going to get you to write anymore, you know, or to look further into this. But what happens to me if you guys don't do the work? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. My recovery is not dependent upon anybody to do it for me. Today I have a relationship with God, all right? I'm going in Monday for my fourth back surgery in 4 years. And there's going to be medication that I have to take after surgery. I'm not scared of that. All right? If this happened 10 years ago that I had to go through these surgeries, I don't think I would have been able to stay sober. I'm pretty confident I wouldn't have. You know, it's because of this work that I've done in this book that's given me the capacity that sanity's been returned, and I can use my will freely. You know, I can try to align my will what I believe is God's will. All right? I fall short of the chosen ideal on a daily basis. I don't have a lot of people in AA that I go to. I don't believe in, you know, a whole group's going to keep me sober. I mean, I talk with Ronnie every week, Frankie in the back room I see every week. You know, Michael I see on Tuesday nights. There's a small handful of men that I do my 10 steps with and that I become close with, you know, and the guys that I work with over the years that I sponsored. But this is this design for living was the best thing that I've ever done for myself. You know, so if you're new in here, especially you guys that are new in this room, who thinking, you know, oh, these big book step study guys, they're out of their trees. We're not. We have sanity. You know, it's been restored to me. And it's a journey. I'm so grateful that I took it. You know, there were times early on where I said, nothing's happening. Where is it? And it's not how it's going to work. It's not like you're going to like instantaneously be like, wow, it's magic. It's a process. So thank you guys for your time tonight. I appreciate it.
Listen up for a minute. If you have